Welcome to the Tech Savvy Professor Podcast, two faculty who love tech and love making it part of their work. I'm Marty Gentius, a faculty member at Kent State University in Kent, Ohio.
And I'm Eric Perry. I'm a clinical faculty at Southern New Hampshire University.
Well, let's start right off the bat. You're not home. You're on the road. What's going on?
Yeah, I'm teaching residency, our week-long skills course in New Hampshire. So I have my road equipment with me. So it may sound a little bit different because the blue snowball mic I usually use didn't make the journey. But overall, you know, excited to be here and a little different venue for recording the show this week.
Yeah, I like the fact that we can be portable and do this as long as we're able to find the time. And we're doing it later at night where we usually do it in the middle of the morning on a Wednesday. So I appreciate you, after spending a whole day out working, coming in and cutting this show for this week.
Yeah.
We talked last week about, last episode, about trying to do episodes about podcasting. And it's a difficult thing to try and capture in 20 minutes. So, and I know there are a lot of faculty who are somewhat interested in how to do this and what it's like and what's involved in it. And so I thought we'd break this into three shows and cover the first show with equipment, the second show with what software you use, and then publication platforms. How do you get your podcast out? So we'll kind of start there with equipment.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. There's a lot. It can seem like a lot that goes into this. And the various pieces and parts have considerations, but I actually think equipment is the easy part for all this.
Yeah. And you can start off at all levels with equipment. You don't need anything sophisticated to do it. The burden that I carry in life is that I worked in terrestrial radio for years, and so I have an ear that tells me when something is not sounding right. So for me, it's always getting the sound as close to being in the same room with the person as possible. And equipment has some to do with that. But you don't need to put a lot of expense into doing a podcast. A microphone can start at $40, and we have someone in the Circular Firing Squad that uses a $40 microphone, and frankly, it sounds pretty good. And, you know, so microphones are sort of one of the big pieces of equipment that you think about. But even before you get to equipment, if you're thinking of doing a podcast, what's the concept? And what I've always suggested to folks is, if you have a concept, check it out and make sure that it hasn't been overdone in the podcast world. And it might mean you have a smaller audience, but if you can find a niche, and I think there are lots of tech podcasts out there, but we're the tech savvy professors. So we're kind of focused on tech and academic and teaching and instruction, which is a niche, which is a small niche, but I think will draw people in knowing what they're getting. So before you do that, if you come up with a concept, I want to do a show on this. Try to imagine 10 different episodes and what those episodes would cover. And if you can't do 10 episodes in your head, it's probably not a good concept, because you want to have a podcast sustainable. And in doing so, you know, you want to go 10 and above, if possible, with the number of podcasts, the number of episodes that you do. So, you know, think about the concept, think about how the different areas that you can go into with it before you commit to doing a podcast.
And I think that plays into the financial end too. So if this is something you're thinking about doing just as a temporary thing, you want to try out a couple episodes, a recording, you don't want to dump a whole bunch of money into it. And, you know, you'll see a lot of those guides if you jump on Google and look for podcasting kits or advice or best podcast gear. You're going to get a lot of recommendations to the really high end kind of stuff. And Marty, I think it's a good point that, especially with audio, performance is on a good spectrum, you can find a decent mic for 40, 50, 60 bucks. And I think when you start to think about this too, and you start to plan those, that concept out, you want to think about how many people are going to be on with you. Is it just you? Are you recording? Are you providing that content? Are you bringing other people in? Because you need to consider their equipment. Are they going to have what you need? Who's editing? Who's handling the back end part of the process? So laying that foundation can really help, especially as you're starting to think about equipment and what you might recommend for others who are going to be podcasting with you.
Yeah, I've got all my little soldiers lined up here on the table because I was trying to remember what microphones I bought and for what purpose. Kind of pick these up like old ladies pick up Hummel figures. I just like microphones and trying different microphones out. So we'll talk about those and why I've made the decisions I made around them going up. But I think a microphone, you can get a good microphone for $100 and under. If you get below 40, you're probably not getting a good quality microphone. You want to get one that's keratoid. So it gives you the focus of the sound is coming from, it can be put in multiple directions or in one direction. So it's looking for sound coming from your mouth instead of the back wall of the room and everywhere around. So, but before we get into that, it's also important to figure what room you're going to record in. If you're going to do this in a studio, I know Elliot does his podcast in a studio that's set up at the university. So, you know, I assume the sound conditions in it are good. All sorts of things in order to do the audio is very good in a studio setting. If you're going to do it in your bedroom, or in my case, my daughter's old bedroom, since she moved out, has been converted into an office, you can get a certain amount of reflection of sound with situations. And I've also got three monitors and a television screen. So I've got sound bouncing all over the place. So to deal with that, I've gone with different microphones to try and isolate that sound. I know somebody who basically started out their podcast because they didn't have a good room to do it in a closet, because that was a small enough room that they didn't have a lot of sound bouncing in it, and they could record their podcast in their closet. Another person got like a refrigerator box. I mean, it sounds sad, but that was their recording studio. And later on, as they got more and more into podcasts, they put more into a full room in terms of having a room to record in.
I mean, if it works, it's not that silly. I think one of the things that you made me think of too, Marty, as you were talking, is there's always that question that I get from folks, like, can I just use my onboard mic from my laptop? My laptop has a microphone. I use it for Teams. I use it for whatever. You really want something dedicated to sound that you can move around in that space and you can place it and see what it sounds like recording in different areas and different placements, you know, with your mouth, with how your audio is in the room. Those microphones aren't really designed. They're going to pick up a lot of ambient noise. They're generally pretty cheap, small. So you don't want to use onboard, and you don't want to use anything that's combined with anything else. As a general rule, you want a microphone that's designed to pick up that sound.
Yeah. So I have my little soldiers lined up, and I'll tell you, I started with a sub $100 microphone, and I had a Snowball. You use a Snowball. Blue is a great company, Blue Microphones, and they make a Snowball. They also make a Nano, and they make a Yeti. The Yeti is heavy. It's one of the heaviest mics I think I've ever. It comes with its own stand, and it's heavy. These are USB-C microphones, so you can go directly from the microphone into your laptop. There's no in-between. Another kind of microphone you'll find is an XLR. XLR is what you see like when you're watching a band play. It's those cables that kind of plug into the bottom of the microphone, and those have to go through some type of processor or some mediary to get it to a USB-C form. So you know, I've got a Blue Nano, I've got a Snowball somewhere, and I've got the Yeti, and all of those were direct into USB-C. The most convenient for people who are starting out for podcasting, because you don't need any intermediary. I stepped up, and I think for $150, I got a Shure, and it looks like a little Snowball. Comes on a little stand. And I got that primarily, it's a Shure MV6, and I got it, it's a USB-C, and I got it because I thought I'd want it for, it's light, it's a Shure product, and I thought I'd want it for travel. So if I was going to a conference and wanted to record something, this is a good small microphone to do it with. But, I talked to a lot of podcasters, and they kind of seduced me into getting two high-end mics. These run around $350. The one that I have not put a lot of use to, but one of my friends swears by, is the Shure MV7. And it's a good solid mic. It's got some touch panels on the front in terms of changing volume. It is a optional either XLR or a USB plug. So you can choose one or the other. The one that I'm using now and that I'm speaking to you through is a Heil PR40, and it is an XLR microphone. So it doesn't go directly into USB-C or USB ports in your computer. It has to go through an intermediary, and I've got this little thing that looks like a box with a dial on it. Reminds me of the old radio days. And that microphone plugs into the bottom of it, and it has a panel dial on it that then the output of that is USB-C. And it's a nice little device. It's a Wave XLR. I think it's by Elgato is the company that makes it. And a podcast friend of mine who has been doing this for 17 years told me about it. And so I picked one up to go with the Heil PR40. So that's my current setup in terms of microphones. Wouldn't expect anybody to be as dedicated to purchasing microphones as I am, but For me, the habit is you get what you pay for. And I know that because when in editing these things, if I go to some of my earlier podcasts when I was using less expensive microphones, it would also pick up all of my breaths. And those you have to, you know, if you're obsessive about it like me, you have to edit those out. I get less of that noise the more expensive microphone that I have. And this Heil is pointed like from the top right at me. And that's where the source goes for this particular microphone.
Yeah. And you definitely have a much larger kit than I do. I bought some over the years, but not quite as many. I like the Blue Snowball. It does what I need it to do. It's relatively cheap, but I also have a Yeti. Like you said, very heavy. Really solid microphone. I think one thing that was recommended to me that I'm interested to try is by Movo. So Movo makes a podcasting kit and has a couple of different mics in their newest series that a friend of mine said works really, really well. I did want to throw a warning there really quick out about the podcasting kits that you'll see online on Amazon. And some of the microphone producers will offer, a lot of times they'll offer things that you don't need. They'll offer headsets, they'll offer pop filters, things that you might not necessarily need as a part of a package that kicks that price up. So if you're looking at keeping a low enough price point, get that mic first, test it out, and then see what else you might need. If you need a stand, if you need an arm to hold that mic, you can add those things later piecemeal. And it's generally cheaper than those kits that come out, and you can get better quality stuff. So a lot of those kits just come with add-on things that they purchase and don't have a whole lot of value.
Another microphone that I know that I have somewhere and is good for portable is there is a Samson, Samson Go Mic. And I purchased a few of these over the years. They're, I don't know, $35-$40 on Amazon. And they fold up like a little, say, half a pack of cigarettes or less. But for a portable mic, it's pretty good. And it has that directionality that you have with Cratertoid mics. That's important. You can switch that and set that up. So for an on-the-go opportunity, that in for a low-end cost, the Samson, S-A-M-S-O-N, Go mic is pretty good, I think, in terms of the sound quality and the output that comes from it. Let's talk about laptops and desktops.
See, this is more my speed, right? I like this conversation. I think for laptops and desktop, for podcasting, you don't need quite as much oomph and power, but you're going to need some storage space, and you're going to need the ability to edit your audio if you're going to be the one doing that post editing. So, you know, there's some minimum requirements that you'll find for your software. If you start to research that, I think you really need to figure out first what it is you're going to use to edit. If you're going to be editing, making sure that you have the hard drive space, the RAM, and the processing speed to run whatever that program is. Something anybody in IT will tell you is that a program's minimum processing requirements are bare bones minimums to run that program by itself with nothing else going on your laptop or PC. So those are minimums to run those programs. You want to make sure that you have things, you know, juiced up a little bit more, because it is taxing to export and to edit within those software programs. So my suggestion is to actually figure out first what you're going to use to edit, if you're going to be editing and storing, and making sure that you go from there in terms of your hardware setup for your PC or your laptop.
Yeah, my suggestion is always go large or go home. Just because, and so we're getting two ends of the spectrum here. I don't disagree with you. You've got to get the right size and get above the minimum requirements for it. For me, the more RAM you've got, the more storage you've got, the faster your processor, that's all helpful, particularly if you're doing this over the internet, if you're using Zoom. You want to avoid dropouts, and you want to avoid, and the internet, we'll talk about that in a minute. You want to avoid problems with the digital to disk kind of transfer that's going on if you're recording these things and storing these things while you're recording them. So there's software we can talk about. We're going to talk about that in part two, and all of that kind of impacts what you can or what you need to have in terms of hardware. But I would, you know, find the best computer that you have access to for recording and for storing and editing on when it comes to a podcast.
Agreed. Yeah, it should be the machine that you have that has the most RAM and the best processing speed. Storage, you can use different strategies to move things around and store on the cloud if you don't want it to kind of live on your hard drive once you're done with it. But, you know, those two things would be the most important, making sure that you have, I would say, 8 to 16 gigs of RAM, at least DDR4. And then your processor speeds, you know, should be something within the last 3 years tops. And, you know, AMD, Intel, all of those are fine. Even something like a 1.7, 1.5 will run just fine. But you can obviously kick that up.
There's a hidden time that goes into this, that depending on the speed of your processor and the RAM that you have, is the whole idea that as you're editing these files and essentially compressing them down to MP3s and doing all sorts of conversions, that can take a longer time than you want on a slow processor. You know, in some cases, we'll talk about this more. I do all the editing in Adobe Audition, and it's noticeable difference in terms of when you're converting or you're taking all of the audio and putting it into one outstream. The time it takes for that to process is really dependent on how strong and how fast your computer is with that. Internet access, bandwidth, Eric?
Yeah, so if you're using Zoom, you can find the Zoom system requirements out there. As an example, I'm streaming from hotel Wi-Fi right now. So I've had to turn my camera off and I'm going audio only because the bandwidth here is not great. It helps with the podcast to be able to see one another. So, you know, it'll say 600 kbps is the minimum to run high quality video, not HD video. 1.2 megabytes per second up and download for HD video. For 1080p, 3.8 megabytes per second is the minimum speed. Those aren't fast speeds for what internet providers give you now, just as a general rule. So you can get as high as 100 fairly cheap megabytes per second. Keep in mind that we're talking about total bandwidth. So if you have other devices running that are connected to that band, it draws on that ability, that upload and download speed per device. So there's a little bit of math that goes into this to make sure that you have enough available bandwidth to be able to run whatever program you're using. I tend to like Zoom because it's the most accessible. People are comfortable with it. So if you're bringing in guests, people who don't attend regularly, it's a really easy platform to bring people in and out of that most people have access to and have used at some point. So you want to make sure that internet can support it and that your guests have internet that can support that video and that audio.
So, Eric, I've got a question, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but it's just curious. On Zoom, you know, I'm running really fast internet. If I have a guest or a series of guests that are added on, but essentially all of the audio and video is being processed by me, does that mean it's also putting a strain on my internet? I mean, I need to have faster internet to support guests coming in.
So as host with Zoom, most of the weight is carried in terms of the bandwidth and the connection by the servers, right? Through the servers. So the incoming connections, more guests can mean more strain on your bandwidth, but that's because of what your computer is trying to pull in.
Mm-hmm.
So host is more about permissions in Zoom than it is about what, like hosting that available space. So it's not going to have as much of a draw on you to have 10 people in as it would to have five. You won't notice a big difference if they all have high-speed connections because that server takes most of the weight.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. The last thing I think I want to talk about when it comes to hardware is storage. And you mentioned that. When I record, I generally don't record to the cloud. I record to storage here. So if I'm doing Zoom like we're doing tonight, it's going into my documents folder and it's going into a subfolder that's Zoom. So all of the shows that I do until I clear out that documents folder and store it someplace else are being stored on my computer in my documents folder under Zoom. What I will do after a show is copy it immediately and put it on another storage device. So I know that I have another place where it's backed up or where it is stored. And after I've accumulated 10 shows or so, I will go through the process of cleaning that out and putting copies on my Synology server. And so it's available there and stored there. But of course, if the house catches fire and I don't grab my server and lug it out of it with me, I also want to keep it stored in the cloud just for backup and for kind of archive and historic purposes.
I think it's wild how much in the digital age we still forget this. I do it with documents way too often for me to comfortably admit in this space, only saving things in one place. I think the biggest example is a CV, right? We work on our CVs and add to them over time. And I probably have, I don't know, 15 versions of my CV that I've kept and updated. You want to make sure that you have a good naming convention for whatever it is you're using so you know what the names of those files are. And if you accidentally save it somewhere else, you can search it out and be able to find it. when you set up your shows to record, like Marty had mentioned, he has it downloaded to a specific folder. You can select that with your options in Zoom, that default folder that that recording will go into. And then you need to make sure you save it somewhere else, because there's always a point of failure of corruption for any type of digital file. So the more places you have it saved, the better. But remember, these are big files too. They can take up a lot of space. Additionally, if you're editing in somewhere like Audition, you need to save those edited Audition files somewhere along with that audio file in case you need to get back in and use that tool to edit something you might have forgotten, or you want to use a part or piece or clip. It can be a lot easier to pull up that Audition file that you already have working as opposed to just the finished audio.
Yeah, I heard the 3-2-1 backup strategy, and that's another story, another episode we can talk about in terms of backup strategies. But the idea that you should have at least 3 copies of your data, 2 local that are on site but on different media or different devices, and at least 1 copy offsite, which would also include cloud storage. But yeah, I from doing digital editing and having, you know, the raw audio that you want to save, then the audio that you've edited certain parts out of, then you take it and you run it through to remove some of the dead air that occurs. So you've got these multiple renditions of audio. I have a tendency, whether it's right or wrong, to record in WAV and store in WAV. So it's a much larger file, but it's also kind of lossless in versus working with other compressed files until I'm ready to do the compression and put the thing out as a MP3 for the podcast. So you're right about that. I didn't even think about all the files I wind up storing coming out of the editing process that I want to keep just for accidents or mistakes or going back and getting material. The naming convention is tough too, because sometimes it's mixed down, sometimes it's raw, sometimes it's edited. I mean, I tag different things on as conventions, and I haven't settled on through my process the different file names that you might use. So I think that's it for this part one on hardware. Yep. Anything else you have in terms of closing remarks?
No, I know we covered a lot, and it seems like a lot, but they're all really important considerations. And if you set yourself up well, it's going to lead to a lot less headaches as you get started.
So our next episode will go into what software is and how we use it as we produce podcasts. And then the third episode will be 2 weeks from now. And that one will cover platforms for getting your podcast out. How can listeners get involved? If you've got a question, or maybe you're trying to figure out how to do something with technology, have an idea to share, email us at thepodtalknetwork@gmail.com or call and leave a message at 330-333-1240. And we'll play your question in the podcast and try and get an answer for you. Our bumper music is from Philip Gross, Rast, from the Free Music Archive. That's it for today's show. Thanks for subscribing to the Tech Savvy Professor podcast. Everything you need to know is at techsavvyprofessor.net. You can find us by searching Apple Podcasts for the Tech Savvy Professor. Look for us on Spotify, TuneIn, Google Play Music. Look for other shows like Circular Firing Squad and thepodtalk.net. Thanks for listening to the Tech Savvy Professor.